Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, it is time for the people to talk to the GM. Although I do have one question.
Yes, sir.
I was at Titans practice today. You were at Titans practice yesterday as they practiced against the Bucs. What was your favorite part of Titans practice yesterday when they played the Bucs?
I think probably the one-on-one pass rush with it, lineman.
Why? Because then you're like, because you get in it, get a little bit of it, get that hand right in there, baby. Then just get him right there. Once you get that, get move right over and get through. All right,
exactly.
I kind of sounded like Ed Orgeron right there, coaching defensive line. But it is 5 o'clock on a Thursday, which means it's time for you.
When the GM speaks,
a little bit of the personality.
Everybody listens.
They understand every situation.
And we're giving you exclusive access to Pick the Brain of former Titans GM Floyd Reese.
Brought to you by Bob's Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows.
Call 615-737-1025 now.
You're never going to make a mistake.
This is Ask the GM.
Ask the GM is presented by Bob's Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville. Best call for the GM, a pair of tickets to see Def Leppard and Journey at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, August 25th. We start off with Andrew, who's going to kick us off today on Ask the GM. Andrew, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate the time. GM, I just had two quick questions about how players get paid first, and I'm just going to use an example of $16 million. Do the players only get 16 paychecks for the whole year, nothing in preseason games, nothing in practice other than a signing bonus? If they play a game week one, then Monday morning, do they have a $1 million paycheck, and then week two, a $1 million paycheck the Monday after week two? That's the first part of the question. And the other part, how do they get paid for playoff games? If the $16 million, does he get a $1 million paycheck for the playoff game, and the $1.6 million player get $100,000 for a playoff game? Or how does their pay structure change, if at all, into the playoffs and Super Bowl as opposed to just the contract they signed? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Andrew. Great.
Yeah,
call.
That's a good question. Okay, this is the way it works. You get paid over 17 weeks, and in your example, let's just say it's $17 million. They will get every Tuesday a check for $1 million. They will also get paid preseason, and your preseason salary is determined by years of experience. And so you'll earn roughly from, it used to be, I don't know what it is now, you would earn maybe from $2,000 a week for a rookie to maybe, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 a week for a vet. That includes, and you get all your meals, and you get per diem when you travel, and you get all of that stuff. That is in addition to your salary. The postseason salary is actually paid by the league to the players. It's in addition to the $1 million a week that they've earned in salary and the preseason. And it's a flat sum for everybody. So, for example, if you are a wild card participant in the first game, I want to say the check is around $30,000-$35,000. If you go to the second round, then it jumps to maybe, you know, $60,000-$65,000. You get to the championship, now you're talking, you know, $80,000-$90,000, and then of course you get to the Super Bowl and it's a strong six figures. So they get their salary paid every Tuesday, whatever it is, divided by 17, preseason salary that is determined by experience, and then a flat sum for postseason. And that's why you hear a lot of people talking about, you know, how excited are you to make it to the playoffs when you're going to get a $35,000 check instead of a $1 million check. You go, whoa, wait a minute. Now, that didn't seem fair.
Well, that's the theory that's the theory on the Russians in the playoffs in the NHL, is that they care more about the Olympics than they do the Cup. So they, you know, you, whatever. It's yeah, like, you know, yeah. I make my $9 million a year playing hockey, and I go to the playoffs for 2 months of every other day having to play a game,
right,
and I care more about a gold medal than I do about the Cup.
Now, obviously, Ovechkin apparently cares a lot about the Cup. So, you know, that I kind of debunked that theory for me, but I know what you mean. Jackson is up next here on Jared and the GM on Ask the GM. Jackson, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Hey, Floyd, just had a quick question. If you were going to start your career over and you could carry one or two players with you throughout your career, just wondering who it would be. And I'll hang up and listen.
Wow.
Thank you, Jackson.
Another good question.
Well, I think Derek Mason and Chris Sanders.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking.
Makes business a lot easier.
I'll tell you what, I have been blessed to be around, you know, some pretty good players. I don't, you know, it'd be hard to not be with the Tom Brady. I mean, how could you pass that up? And then I don't know who the second one would be. I mean, there are so many good choices. Eddie George, you love Eddie George.
You gotta take let's say this. If Brady's your offensive player, which is the easiest cop-out that you could have, although it is probably the truth, Brady's your one offensive player, who's your one defensive player?
Yeah. I mean, it's too hard. There are just too many of them. I mean, too many. I mean, you love Kevin Carter. You love Van den Bosch. You love Javon.
I mean, I don't even know who on those dirty Vikings teams you had.
Yeah. I mean, Keith Bullock, you love him. I'm just thinking Titans. Yeah, I mean, you go back. Alan Page was a Hall of Fame defensive tackle, the only defensive player to be MVP elite. I mean, he was phenomenal. I mean, as good a player, he was as good on defensive line as Brady is as a quarterback, you know?
So take him.
Good.
Okay, Alan Page is the other one. David is up next on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Bella Windows. David, you're on with the GM.
Hey, guys, appreciate you having me on. I was actually just wondering the process as far as if you guys have a new coach coming in as a GM, how do you stay on top of that coach and make sure that he's doing the right thing to with all these new players coming in with, you know, really being the first time he's ever done it?
Yeah, and that's a good question. That most of that you try to solve in the interview process so that you get an idea. Now, from my personal experience was when – We ended up hiring Jeff Fisher, but what we did was we made the change in the regular season with enough time to evaluate Jeff on all those things before we actually made the hire. So we got to see Jeff, you know, work a practice. We got to see him put players through the meetings. We got to see him during the game. We got to see all of those kinds of things that if you haven't seen, you've got to sit down and talk with him about it and hope that, in fact, he can, you know, produce what he's telling you he can. That's why I think for John to be able to hire a guy like Mike Vrabel, he's very comfortable with, because I'm sure Mike gave him all the right answers. But John also knows that that's the experience that Mike has. Mike has been associated with all those different programs that have been very, very successful and would, you know, he's not going to imitate it completely, but certainly will have an influence on everything he does.
Let's go to Jacob, who's up next here on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Bella Windows. Jacob, you're on with Floyd Reese.
Hey, guys, I got a question about preseason process. Uh-huh. What is it like for you to pick, or how do you pick the teams that you're going to go into preseason with? And what's the conversation between you and the other GM when you're scheduling that preseason game? Thanks, guys.
You know, it's interesting because it used to be where you would pick your own games. And you would pick teams that you liked playing because of proximity. You picked teams that you liked playing because their fan base was very, very strong, and therefore your cut of the preseason gate was going to be very, very good. Or you would want to play somebody that maybe you knew the coach really well, and so you knew what kind of game it was going to be and that type of thing. Now the league has taken all that over. And now the league just rotates them. They'll get input. All the schedules, get a little bit of input from the teams. Doesn't mean the league will listen to what the teams that want, but the league, you can send things to the league like, you know, our stadium we have to share with the baseball team. Therefore, we don't ever want to play, you know, a home game on a Sunday afternoon during the World Series, something like that. And they'll take all that into consideration and try to shape your schedule a little bit for you.
More of your calls on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows, 615-737-1025. We are live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. in Mount Juliet. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I have something also that I am furious about. We'll get to that and your calls on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville. Jose Ureña, who was the pitcher for the Marlins yesterday that threw at Ronald Acuña Jr., 6-game suspension. I thought it was going to be like a 20-game suspension.
Yeah, should have been.
6 games. Unbelievable. Acuña, by the way, back in the Braves lineup today, so hopefully he'll hit his 4th home run to lead off the game in a row, which I would be thankful for, and it would be very exciting. But we go right back to your phones on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville. Brad is up next. Brad, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Hey, guys. Floyd, I was just wanting to know, you were talking about hits and misses earlier. I was wanting to know what your biggest hit, it could be acquisition or basically getting somebody in a draft. What was your biggest hit and miss in your career? Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
Wow. I mean, the biggest miss, I think, for me was a guy called Bryant Mix, which I've mentioned before.
I don't think you have. I think you've mentioned it to me, but I'm not sure you told it to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it was a second-round pick out of Alcorn that I knew better than to, and I did it anyway. So anyway, that would probably be the biggest miss.
How did you know better?
He just wasn't a good player.
So why'd you draft him?
Because everybody else loved him. I mean, everybody. And I thought, I got to be wrong on this. You know, I said, I'm not seeing what I'm supposed to see here. And then we got him to camp. And I saw what I needed to see. all the hits, I mean, we've had, you know, we have 3 rookie of the years. I mean, we had some pretty good hits in there, but I think you always take pride in those hits that you get later on. You know, somebody that
Finnegan.
That yeah, like a Cortland Finnegan who you draft in the 7th round and he's in the Pro Bowl. You know, guys of that caliber, Derek Mason, you know, who you get in the 4th round and he ends up being a all-time leading yards, whatever it was, you know, things like that. Simply because you know it's so much harder than hitting on a Eddie George or Javon Kearse.
Well, I would say, like, I think your biggest hit, in my opinion, as Titans general manager, that I look at and I say, okay, this was an absolute just slam dunk hit, was the Eddie George trade in the 96 draft. You traded back and received 2 other picks. You traded back in the 1st round, and you got 2 other picks, and then traded back up to get Eddie. And so you ended up using your 1st-round pick, and you got Eddie George, your starting running back that you won an AFC championship with, and John Runyon, your starting right tackle that you won an AFC championship with. And I look at that as when you can use 1 first-round pick and get an all-pro running back and a starting right tackle, mm-hmm. like that's better than even if you got a star at number 1 overall.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me is, I think, like the biggest hit.
That
no
was big, you know. But you take great pride you decide to sign somebody like Kyle Vandermosh, who was a great college player, had never played in the league, had been hurt for 2 or 3 years, just good, and then he comes in and he ends up in a Pro Bowl. You know, you get that done, you go, wow. Now that was. I mean, it's a lot. It's good fortune and luck and all that's involved too. I know.
I'll tell you another great hit, Rob Baronis. You know, an undrafted free agent, Arena League kicker, right. That is a Pro Bowl kicker for 10 years. Let's go to Tristan, who's up next on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville. Tristan, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Hey, what's going on, Floyd? If you covered this, I apologize. I can't tap that app at work. But my question is, what do you think is missing from college athletics to ensure things like U of MD and Ohio State don't happen?
You know, that's another great question. I mean, in my opinion, I think we're leaving too much of this up to the head coach. And I don't mean that you need to run your program for them. But even though these guys have developed a CEO-type attitude, there needs to be, you know, a board of regents or somebody over that, in my opinion, the AD. And I think if you're the AD, you understand what they're doing, and this is a program. But you have to be able to go out to a football practice, watch a football practice, see the way they're treating people, see the way they're reacting with the players, and be able to pull them into your office and say, hey, you know what? I love you. You're a great coach. You're going to win a bunch of games. But we can't be, you know, screaming at kids. We can't be slapping trays of food out of their hands. We can't be doing those kinds of things. Now, hopefully you don't hire somebody that's doing that, but unfortunately, sometimes it happens.
Let's go to Nick, who's up next here on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville. Nick, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Yeah, so I just wanted to question. I noticed over the last couple years in the NFL, it seems like there's been a lot more trades in the offseason and the draft and stuff like that. And I know, you know, when I was younger, you just didn't see a whole lot of that in the NFL like you did in other sports. And my question is, did something change, like with the rules, or do coaches just value things differently now, or was there cap penalties that have changed? Like, is there anything that's changed in that regard?
Another good question. We've got some good questions. I'll tell you what's happened more than anything else is the cap has skyrocketed so that there's more money out there between the teams. I mean, the reason for a while trades were almost non-existent was, you know, you would see a player and a player would be available, you know, but his contract was for $4 million and you only had $1.5 million worth of cap space. I think now, because nobody is really in, you know, cap jail, you've always got a little bit of money left out there so that if a great trade pops up and, you know, you like the player, that you're going to be able to cover the contract. And I think, too, you know, there are people, more people in the league that are willing to maybe take a shot on some guy that maybe other teams don't like, maybe even the team they're with don't like. But because you've done such good research on him coming out of college, you know all about him and you know you're going to like him.
I just wonder, Belichick is big on trading. Why isn't John Robinson big on trading?
Well, Bill, keep in mind why Bill trades. And once we get to a point where we're closing in on cap, we could end up being in the same way. But Bill sits down with you and talks to you and says, you know what? We'd like to re-sign you. We like you, and we understand, Taylor Lewan, we understand that you're probably going to want to be the highest paid tackle in the league, but we can't make you the highest paid tackle in the league. But we can pay you a real good fare. And you say, no, I'm in line to be the highest paid tackle in the league. Okay. And tomorrow you're traded.
2 second rounds and a first. Michael is up next on Ask the GM, presented by Bob Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows. Michael, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. My question is, with the roster cuts coming up, what is the process for evaluating those guys that are cut from the Titans or cut from another team? How do you find that diamond in the rough and potentially the next AJ Boye? Thank you very much, and I'll shut up and listen.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I'll tell you, right now, all of these preseason games that you see, John has taken, now I'm assuming, this is kind of the way we did it, most teams do it, I'm assuming John did it this way. You'll take the entire league and divide them up between your scouting department and yourself and your directors. And so, you know, it breaks down, say, maybe every guy has four teams that he's dealing with. And all of this time during camp, when they're not actually at practice or watching tape on practice, they will be breaking down these teams. And you go into a team and you look at them and you say, okay, who are the guys that are likely to be available? So you look at the draft choices, you look at the bottom 10 guys on the roster, for example, and you look at the list of free agents, and you just go through and scout all those guys. And when you're all said and done, you'll have reports written on virtually every guy that will be cut in the league. And then they put together a board, a free agency board that's just like the draft board. And as these guys come off, if a guy pops off a board or pops off of somebody's roster and he's the number one guy on your board and you have a chance to claim him, then you claim him. And sometimes you're lucky enough to find that diamond in the rough.
John is up next on Ask the GM. John, you're on with Floyd.
Hey, guys. I was just curious, Floyd, as a GM, when a team is maybe not looking so profitable on the whole, you know, as an organization, what impact does that have upon you as a GM in making roster moves or trying to pick up guys?
You know, the Raiders right now.
Yeah, the biggest effect it has on you, and the Raiders are kind of seeing it right now, is that you can't do everything you want from a personnel standpoint. You can't sign the players that you want to see sign. If you get an injury and you need to go get another top-line player, and that top-line player is out there, you don't have the money to sign him. So what you end up doing is you end up having to pass on him and sign a guy that is maybe a second-tier guy, but still, you know, will come in and fit a role. But if you're in a team that's really going to be a contender and you think there's a chance you can go to the Super Bowl and all those kinds of things, well, if you don't have the money to operate, then you can't, you know, you actually cut your chances of getting someplace. Again, now with the cap the way it is, I don't think it's as much of an issue. 10, 15 years ago, it really was an issue.
Well, for the Raiders, I read somewhere that the reason that they may not be able to get the Khalil Mack deal done is because they may not, Mark Davis, the owner, may not have the money. I guess you told me this, like I read this somewhere else, but you told me in order to sign a big contract, like the $50 million that Taylor Lewan just signed for goes to New York or wherever and sits in a bank, right?
Yeah, the money that's not paid to him, if it's guaranteed for, you know, fully guaranteed, you have to put it in an escrow account in New York.
I think what I read was that there's a rumor that Mark Davis may not have the money to be able to give Khalil Mack that big contract that Khalil wants. Wow. So Khalil wants the big money. But it's not that they don't have the cap or that they don't want to give it to him. It's that they ain't got it. It's like LeVar Ball's little basketball league that's got no money behind it.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do then? And now it's like, well, you can't sign Khalil Mack because you ain't got the money, and you got to move to Oakland or you got to move to Vegas to get the suites so you can get the money so that you can start paying people.
And that's not going to come for another couple of years.
No.
Probably. Yeah.
So that's the spot they're in. Ask the GM if you missed your chance to get in with Floyd. You can next week, next Thursday at 5 o'clock. Ask the GM is presented by Bob's Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville. Buck Rising, our own Titans reporter, joins us next in studio. His thoughts on both days of practice with the Bucks. We'll get into that coming up next on Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the app you need to tap, the Game Nashville app.
What's up with Delaney?
He's being looked at. I'll let you know after. I probably won't let you know, but hopefully he'll be okay.
Mike Vrabel earlier today. Delaney Walker leaves practice gingerly with a doctor, limping on, I think, one of his feet. But that's all we got, and that's all we're going to get, and that's all we know. Our own Titans reporter, Buck Rising, in studio with us. Buck, what do we think about Delaney?
I mean, at this point, it's just speculation, so I don't want to get into that. But how much Floyd Reese did you enjoy Mike Vrabel's answer there?
Oh, it's great. And I told him, it's funny, we were laughing. I go, who asked that question? Did they really expect to get an answer?
Oh, no. I mean, at this point, Floyd, we're just kind of like every third day, we'll just lob up. Hey, yeah. What's going on with Rashawn?
Anything new?
Anything? what's the word? I saw he was out here today. Come on, Mike. You know you want to tell us. No, I mean, Delaney, it's you don't want to see that at all, especially because he was having a good practice early on. Marcus was finding him in stride. Marcus threw a really, really pretty pass to Delaney to kind of lead him. I think it was, I can't remember the name of the Buck safety that was working in coverage, but it was a really, really tight window, and Marcus just put it right in there. I mean, they looked like they were legitimately in rhythm before he ended up getting hurt in the one-on-one drills, and, you know, you can debate how important those are when it's so slanted in favor of the offense. So, not ideal to have Delaney Walker go down. I don't know how much time he was going to play in the preseason game anyway, because Mike Vrabel said after practice that based on how many good reps they got out on the practice field against the Bucks would determine how little or how much those guys play in the actual game. So I found that interesting. And at least I guess you get to see what Jonnu Smith can do. I know that's your boy, Jared. I know
Jonnu Smith?
Yes.
I mean, as long as he didn't get any penalties, I have no idea. Maybe he'll get better his second year. I don't know.
I say he can run now.
Yeah, he can.
He can run.
And he looks physically bigger. I mean,
the Titans are totally up a creek if Delaney Walker's out.
No, we don't.
Yeah, no, that's really, really bad. I mean, that's whatever. Drop touchdown passes last year or not, like, that's the best security blanket that you have for Marcus Mariota. So, no extended missed time for Delaney Walker. That would not bode well.
What did we think about the overall matchup between the Titans and the Bucks over the 2 days?
I think they split it. I felt like on the whole, the Bucks defense had a better day against the Titans receivers the first day, and then the passing game for the Titans looked pretty sharp today, I thought. Even after Delaney went down, Marcus looked pretty competent. I liked the level of competition that was out there, and we talked about how in the second day we would probably see a little more flare ups, and there was I forget who the linebacker was that popped Deion Lewis pretty hard, and then Quentin Spain started jawing at one guy, and everybody, and not just Mike Vrabel in there to break the pile up, but John Robinson. That was funny because those guys were not about to let anything go down out
John
there.
Robinson sprinted
John
in.
John Robinson, not once, but twice, because it happened on back-to-back plays. Well, like, John is playing no games with these boys.
Well, the best was, you know, Mike's blowing the whistle, like, you know, just constant, just trying to blow it like a coach. And John comes running in there, like arms flailing, and just runs in there. And immediately grabs Taylor Lewan, like, by the back of the shoulder pads and is, like, dragging Taylor back.
I legitimately thought they were going to give Taylor a playoff after that, but no, they just let him go.
Then the next play is another running play. So Deion Lewis getting knocked to the ground is what started the whole thing. Then the next play, there's a run play, and, like, the linebacker who's with Stocker, you see Stocker kind of go flying with somebody grabbing onto his shoulder, and his jersey's being pulled, and it was right next to Taylor. And immediately Taylor disengages his block after the play's over and turns right at the guy who is grabbing on Stocker's jersey or sent Stocker flying, and here comes John running right back in. And John just goes and grabs Taylor right
Jared
away.
Jared ate that up, Floyd, if you couldn't tell. Jared
like,
loved
John,
that.
John, just stay over there. You know Taylor's going to go back for seconds.
Yeah, no, Taylor wanted him a piece of Jason Pierre-Paul. Like, Jason Pierre-Paul had a better day in the first joint practice than he did in the second. Taylor definitely brought something, a little something extra with him today after JPP put him on skates.
That's a great matchup for both those guys.
It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's a premier matchup right there.
Even with half a hand, he's still really good.
So my big takeaway from what I saw today, Buck Rising, our own Titans reporter in studio with us, my big takeaway from what I saw today was, like, with Delaney Walker out, Marcus had almost no help out there from what I saw. You know, it's like he was going right to Corey Davis, who was his by far favorite guy to throw the ball to today. The offensive line didn't give him much help. We can't tell much about the running game. But I said this to you, Nick Williams was his second favorite receiver today behind Corey Davis. And if that's the case, you're not going to win a lot of football games.
No, I mean, the Nick Williams hype, for most of which you are responsible.
All of which.
Which is fine. Nick Williams, good guy.
This is a very influential show.
Cagey vet Nick Williams out there. Cagey veteran. Like, my whole thing with Nick Williams is, okay, he's a solid player, and he makes special teams plays, and he knows what he's doing, and that's very important because the rest of the guys don't. And this is the whole idea of this veteran wide receiver presence. that people say that the Titans need in the in that meeting room? Well, they have it in Nick Williams, and his job, other than to make special team plays and other than to kind of ease everybody's transition into the new offense, is to help bring those younger guys along. And I think he's doing that. So if he does that, if even if he's not the actual playmaker or an actual like wide receiver, if he does that, I think he's serving your value there.
No, my big problem though is that Marcus needs more help. You know, if it's only Davis and Nick Williams and he's got no help,
Jonnu, two tight ends. Let's go.
If he's got only Corey Davis and the offensive line's not helping out, not like, I don't care what kind of offense you're running, I don't know how Marcus can succeed like that.
No, I mean, and you're
what gonna, I saw today.
Yes, you're spot on, and I think ideally they'd like to rely on the run game and the defense early, just as they kind of try to bring everything in the passing game along. But I mean, if you can't go one dimensional, obviously people will figure you out in a hurry. The Rishard Matthews thing is so strange, because we see him out there occasionally today, and it's just like, what is going on with this guy?
It's honestly, the ghost.
It's so bizarre. And like, it's like I'm looking, oh, does he look a little skinnier today or something? Like, can I tell anything? Because of course we're not getting any information on the guy. But yeah, no, you don't like how, like, you didn't like the skill positions a ton beforehand, and now with all the injury or perceived injuries or whatever, hydration issues, whatever's going on with these guys actually that's keeping them out, it's you don't feel great about it.
Floyd, what do you think it is? I believe.
Oh, I have no clue.
See, I believe Floyd can, like,
Titans
diagnose.
General manager, yeah. Floyd Reese, no. Speculates.
Floyd can diagnose any of this stuff. When Teddy Bridgewater got hurt, I read him like one tweet, and Floyd was like, oh, yeah, that can't be a torn ACL. That's got to be like a dislocation of the knee if they're calling the ambulance and they're doing this, that. I'm like, and then 3 days later it came out and it was like, Teddy Bridgewater had a dislocation of the knee. I'm like, how did you know that? You're like, well, it's simple. If the knee goes into this place and then comes out, I'm like, how do you
like
know
I know
that?
Like, I know.
So what do we yes, think this know. Is with Rishard Matthews?
Oh, I have no clue.
Liar.
Let me ask you this, Buck. Do sure. you, before the first preseason game,
yes,
I think all of us were kind of really looking at the offense with the question. You know, you're kind of, what's going to happen here? They go into the preseason game. I'm talking about the starters, and they have that first series, and now everybody's going, wow, you know what? There may be a...
Oh, no, I remember this very well, Floyd. He made me give a hot take about it, and I said the offense was going to look like crap. They look great.
There you go.
This is why you don't hot take.
Now you've seen 2 days of practice with another team. Do you see the offense progressing? Do you see everything
yes.
you want to see?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say at this point. I mean, I think that the first day he looked like he was, you know, figuring out new defensive backs, as were the wide receivers. They're trying to see how their skill sets match up against each other and figure one another out. I think on the whole, based on how we saw them execute, even if it was just one series, I know people we are overanalyzing so much in three passes of Marcus Mariota. But I think that you can see the rhythm of the passing game start to develop even in the second day with the joint practices with the Bucs. I think that you based on what you saw in Green Bay, that you can feel comfortable about where Marcus feels in terms of what they want him to do and like how to execute and pre-snap communication and like the fundamentals of it. So I think that he's further along than people give him credit for. And I think, you know, I said this earlier in the day, you know, people, it's really hard to play quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So I think that, again, with nothing else to talk about, we overanalyze Marcus, and that this is, you legitimately have to believe him when he gives you the cliche of it's a process. But I think for where he is in the process, I think you could feel good about what they look like or what they will look like on Saturday against Tampa Bay.
Our own Titans reporter, Buck Rising, in studio with us. Your hot take.
No.
For game number two, your hot take for game number one.
I won't
was
give you
way
another one. No, you will not do this
it
to me again.
It was a terrible take. What is your hot take?
You know,
they ran one series. Buck's hot take was that the fans are going to be furious at Matt LaFleur after game one.
You are
and
so.
And they went down the field and scored a touchdown. What is your
I'm
hot take for game two?
I'm not giving you another
gotta
one.
Gotta have it.
The secondary gets burned again, and everybody freaks out. Everybody loses their mind. Everybody loses their mind.
If Malcolm Butler gets
Mike Evans
burned.
And DeShaun Jackson and this Godwin receiver who nobody knows but is apparently a good player,
well, if
everybody
you
freaks
watch
out.
College football, he played at Georgia. He was pretty good. But if Malcolm Butler gets burned Saturday night, I'm going to throw a chair. Like, I'm going to freak out. Like, Bobby Knight. Like, I am going to freak out if Malcolm Butler gets burned. And I'm going to...
No, they're going to have, like, five interceptions now because you made me give a hot take. Like, this is such a terrible way to do this.
We will hold you to this, Buck Rising, our own Titans reporter. Buck, we appreciate it, as always.
You're welcome. Thanks. Happy to do it, guys.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. I am about to go on a rant. I am going to go on a rant, and we will do that coming up next here on Jared and the GM. But it's always ranting about bad things. Sometimes I like to rant about good things. And you know what is good? Innovative Medical Solutions. That's right. If you have a bad knee, hip, or shoulder that is keeping you from doing the things you love, then you need to call my friends at Innovative Medical Solutions. If you have arthritis, then you need to call my friends at Innovative Medical Solutions. Why? Because they feature an exciting, effective solution so many Americans have turned to. It's called regenerative medicine, and it's a branch of medicine that helps your body repair itself naturally without surgery and with no downtime. Everybody hates surgery. Everybody hates downtime. Everybody hates pain pills. Everybody hates addiction to pain pills. So don't do it. Call Innovative Medical Solutions. Let the doctors at Innovative Medical Solutions evaluate you and see if you're a good candidate for this life-changing treatment. Innovative Medical Solutions is located in Franklin and easy for you. Get back to doing all the things you like to do and call them today and tell them you heard about it from me, Jared Stillman, and you will receive a free consultation. Now, we only have 15 of these until 2 o'clock tomorrow, so get in now. Innovative Medical Solutions for a free consultation using my name, Jared Stillman. That is a $250 savings. Call them now, 615-461-5040. That's Innovative Medical Solutions, 615-461-5040. One more time, 615-461-5040. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. So I saw a thing on the scroll today here on the show that said the Broncos will not sign quarterback Colin Kaepernick. And I thought, why is that a story? Like, how is that a story? Like, remember, like, that would be like saying, you know what? You know who else won't sign Colin Kaepernick? The Steelers will not sign Colin Kaepernick. Breaking news, the Steelers will not sign Colin Kaepernick. At least, that's what I know. I don't have any sourcing for that, but that's what I know. What if I tweeted out right now, per source, Steelers will not sign Colin Kaepernick? I mean, I'd be right, right?
I would think you probably would be.
So I guess like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, John Elway thought about trying to bring in Colin Kaepernick. And I'm reading, this is a legitimate story on ESPN.com. Broncos won't consider Colin Kaepernick if a QB is signed. Quote, as the Denver Broncos try to decide what they'll do to find a backup quarterback, John Elway said Thursday that Colin Kaepernick will not be a consideration. In a week when the Broncos demoted Paxton Lynch to number 3 and are working second-year quarterback Chad Kelly as the number 2, Elway, the team's president of football operations and general manager, has not ruled out signing a veteran to be Case Keenum's backup. Kaepernick was asked Elway was asked Thursday if Kaepernick was a viable option. How many years do you have to be out of the league before people are like, he can't play it? He's been out of the league too long.
Oh, I don't, you know. I mean, generally, it's only 1-2 max.
So Kaepernick has been out of the league for a year, a full year, right? Or has he been out longer?
At least.
Yeah. So Kaepernick's been out for a year. Elway was asked if Kaepernick's a viable option. Quote, you know what? And I said this a while ago, Colin had his chance to be here. We offered him a contract. He didn't take it, Elway said. As I said in my deposition, he's had his chance to be here. He passed it. Elway gave a deposition in May for Kaepernick's lawyers in Kaepernick's collusion case against the NFL. Kaepernick attended the deposition. Let me just say this, and this is what bothers me. A, that's not a story. B, Colin Kaepernick is not that good. C, is he not in the league because of the kneeling for the anthem? On some level, yes. But D, some of it is because he opted out of his contract with the 49ers. He didn't want to be with the Broncos, as Elway pointed to. I'm so sick of this idea that everybody is just telling Colin Kaepernick that they, you know, everyone's saying that Colin Kaepernick's blackballed from the league when Kaepernick didn't want to go places. And now it's this big story because everybody knows that the second that you write something about Kaepernick, it will get people's attention. And it's driving me crazy. Like, this is football, people. Football is like the number one sport in America where I feel like everything is based on how much you help the team win. And being a distraction is something that helps the team lose. So Jalen Ramsey, for example, is a distraction. But Jalen Ramsey is so good that it doesn't matter because you can't find somebody as good as Jalen Ramsey, so you just deal with his baggage. But at some point, Jalen won't be as good as Jalen is now, and the second that happens, and he's still a mouthy little, you know, whatever, they're going to get rid of him because that's how this league works. And I just don't get why Colin Kaepernick, who is a distraction, a 50 times distraction than Jalen Ramsey, is a distraction. No one wants to sign that as their backup quarterback, and yet people still write stories about it and get mad about it, and I just don't know why. It is so simple to me, and no one is willing to like look at the simple thing about this, and instead ESPN's got to put on the bottom scroll, Elway says he won't be the quarterback, and you know, coming up next on all the political talk shows, should John Elway bring him in? We'll break it down on politicaltalk.com. Drive me nuts. This is football.
It's always the same. It's always and this it's like the kneeling issue, you know? I mean, you can have 3,500 guys stand and you have six guys kneel, and all you're gonna hear about are the six guys that kneel. It's the way it works.
It just drives me crazy. It's like
yeah.
It's like everybody thinks there's some kind of mission to there's some kind of mission on some level or another to keep people out of the league, and that they don't want Kaepernick in the league, and they don't. It's not that like this is my belief, and I could be totally wrong. I don't believe that the league doesn't want Colin Kaepernick in the league. I believe the individual teams do not want Colin Kaepernick on their team because he is a distraction, and it would take away from what they're actually trying to accomplish. Again, good versus bad. What's the good? He's a backup quarterback who might be better than some of these bum backup quarterbacks. So, you know, how good is he? Well, you know, he wouldn't win a lot of games in San Francisco. The bad? The fact that now every camera in America is in your locker room wanting to talk to your guys as you're getting ready for the season, and your starting quarterback now has to deal with that as well.
As does everybody in the locker room, you know. Well, what do you think about it? Well, what do you think about it? Well, they just go right down the line. I agree with you. There are a lot of issues involved here. And as with, I think, this entire situation, this two-year ordeal that we've been through, it has gone in so many different directions, so many different incorrect directions that it's such a mess now. I don't think anybody knows what it is.
Well, I think it's this simple, and I think everybody needs to understand this. And I mean this in all sincerity. Not everybody is racist, number one, and we have a lot of progress to make as a country, number two. And the number three thing is we don't need to look to football and the people that play it or the people that coach it in order to solve all of the world's problems. Because no offense, Floyd, but do you really think, and I think you're a really smart guy, but do you really think you're smart enough to solve the world's problems?
Yeah, no.
I think you are great at what you do.
Yeah.
And as I told you earlier, I think if you gave Floyd Reese a year and said, Floyd, I need you to draft me a legitimate offensive line, Floyd could find you a good offensive line in the draft. He could find you a Benji Olsen or a Sebastian Vollmer or a Nate Solder or a Logan Mankins or all those, you know, Michael Roos, all the guys you drafted. You could do that. I believe in that. But I don't think you're trained to solve the world's problems. So we don't need football to do that. And I'm just so tired that it's going to be tomorrow, biggest story in the country right there.
You think?
In football, yes.
Really?
All the shows will talk about it. Guaranteed.
Wow.
Skip and Shannon will do 2 hours on it.
Wow.
We will not, but we will talk Titans tomorrow at 2 o'clock on Jared and the GM. Rest in peace, Aretha. Jared and the GM. Life was so unkind, and you're the key to my